All right, what this is going to be is every year for my contribution to the summer school, I take a subject out of the basic Rosicrucian philosophy. And this year, the subject is consciousness. And we'll be looking, in the evening talks, we'll be looking at consciousness as it's talked about mostly in the Rosicrucian cosmic conception. And then in the afternoon, I try to parallel that with astrological talks. When we talked about building the soul body, we looked at the vital body in astrology. And the same thing when we looked at the desire body, and then last year we looked at cycles. So this time, it's going to be flavors of consciousness. And the whole idea is that consciousness isn't uniform. There are different degrees of consciousness, which we're going to talk about mostly in the evening talks, but there are different flavors of consciousness. And those flavors of consciousness, at least as far as they're found in the desire world and the astrology that expresses from the desire world, is what we're going to look at. And what we're doing is not really good astrology. It is just taking horoscopes as examples and looking at one or two little things on each horoscope to get the flavor of the feeling of it. And the way we're doing this is we're taking two planets per day, and we're taking two planets that are planetary opposites of each other. The philosophy of planetary opposites are that each pair of planetary opposites complements each other. And it's like complementation in colors. Like red is the opposite of green. Green absorbs everything but green, and red absorbs everything but red. And from them you get a total picture in planetary opposites. In practical application, at least as Max Heindel taught astrology, that if you have a planet that is in trouble, and it has only bad aspects, and it has no redeeming positive aspects to work with that planet, what you then do is you work with the planetary opposite. Sort of like if you take, for example, the planetary opposite of Saturn is Jupiter, and where Saturn rules contraction and bringing things down to a very small point, what Jupiter represents is expansion all the way to universal ideas in the region of abstract thought. And so what we're going to do is each day we're going to look at eight horoscopes. And the first 4 days will be planetary opposites, but since Mercury and Pluto do not have any planetary opposites, we'll cover them on the last day because they're both neutral in their own way. It's going to be rather light, and we're going to go through things in an easygoing sort of way. All right. Now for planetary opposites, in the last century there was a very great astrologer named Mark Edmund Jones, and Mark Edmund Jones was actually a probationer with the Rosicrucian Fellowship. And when he deals with planetary opposites, he talks about them in terms of a line of a different kind of consciousness. For example, the opposite that we just talked about of Saturn and Jupiter, he called that the line of judgment. So what we're talking about today is the sun and the moon. And they both deal with each one with a different kind of light. So what we're going to look at are horoscopes of a line of light. And the sun in all of this has been called the day star because it is a positive light. The moon is called the queen of night, and the light from the moon is a reflective moon. And so that's what we're going to look at. In almost all spiritual philosophies, light has been the symbol of waking consciousness. We are awake in the day, or at least most of us are. And in all societies, to become awakened in higher consciousness is to become enlightened. For example, we find the famous Orphic philosopher Pythagoras said he could not give a definition for God. But if you were to try to give a definition for God, it would be a being whose body was light and whose soul was truth. And so we're going to do that. We're going to look at light. Boy, this is hard. I'm going to have to get a light out for them. Certainly for the next one, but for this evening. But no, I don't want to put it on. It's too hot. I'll get a little fluorescent. Throughout Christianity, the sun has been associated with Christ and Christ Jesus. It's been associated with the positive life spirit. And in this regard, the sun, the visible sun, S-U-N, has also been associated with the S-O-N, the sun. And especially in St. John's Gospel, Christ says numerous times, to know me is to know the Father. And that is like saying that the brightness of the light indicates the power that is behind it. That is the Father, or the first attribute of the Spirit, the threefold Spirit is the Father, and it is the attribute of power, and from that power, light becomes manifest. All right, now let's look at some horoscopes. I only made a dozen of these, and I don't know how many people are here, so there's going to have to be some sharing going on, which I think is always a good thing. You can decide among yourselves who's going to share and how. The first horoscope is the horoscope of Max Heindel, the founder of the Rosicrucian Fellowship. I'm going to have to do that because I have only certain things that I want to say. What? It's not long enough, I don't think. I'll give it a try when the horoscope has been passed out of me. No, I'll just have to move over. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good idea. And this, I'll be sure to have myself all tied. Almost like a Charlie Chaplin comic movie or something like that. Good. Yes, it's great. It's probably just as much as I need. Isn't it turned off? I thought I hit it. Oh, geez. All right, because that thing generates a lot of heat. Uranus is the planetary opposite of Neptune. Yes, on the transcendent level, Neptune is the spiritual masculine, and Uranus is the spiritual feminine. On the phenomenal level, Uranus is masculine and Neptune is feminine. It's one of those things that because of the activation and passing through the lens from the transcendental worlds to the phenomenal, we're going to go into that on Friday, but you just had to cop out on us, and so it's just things you're going to miss. All right. Now, this is somebody that is an enlightened being. You can't read through a page of his writing without awakening some kind of inner light, because there's a lot that was put into it. Now, the sun in this horoscope is prominent because it's in its home sign, Leo, and it rules the ascendant, and it's conjoined to the moon. So this is an extremely solar chart. So this is someone who, since the ascendant represents the outer person and the sun represents the inner person, this is somebody who is the same inwardly as they are outwardly. Obviously, these charts are chosen to make it really easy, obvious cases. So we just said a moment ago that someone who is brilliant in spiritual light, the sun is the person the sun is the planet that indicates that kind of light. Leo is the sign that rules the heart. So this is very much a heart person. And sometimes heart people are misunderstood. I'll just give you a little anecdote about this person's life. All of us have read probably all of the books, or most of the books that he wrote. But this is someone who in his spiritual career progressed ever more in the direction of the heart and ever more toward love. And some of his followers, early followers, were not so inclined. They thought he was not a real occultist. They said he was becoming too much of a softie with all of his talking about love. And they actually got a petition together to get rid of the founder of the organization because he no longer represented Rosicrucianism. So they thought occultism should be made of sterner stuff. So as the anecdote goes, the softy gave them all their hats and told them to leave because they were in no position to really know what the Rosicrucian philosophy was. In this horoscope, the sun and the moon are both in the 12th house. And the 12th house is the house of ripeness. So this indicates somebody that has been aspiring to the light and has brought it himself to the light from many, many past lives. This is somebody that was ripe. This is somebody that in the course of a few short weeks went from being a sensualist by his own descriptions. I have a copy of a letter that he wrote to Ledbetter at that time, where he said, "When I came to your first lecture, I came to learn about clairvoyance so I could take advantage of people's secrets. And when I came, I was a sensualist and was a meat eater and smoked and drank and did all of those things. And within 6 weeks' time, he was pretty much in control of all of his thoughts. I worked most of my life at it, and I've only gotten a little way. That's what ripeness is like." So in this case, even though the planets are in the 12th house, many of the planets in this horoscope are in positive signs, that is, fire and air signs. And they are signs that give attitudes to be outward. The light cannot be held back. If you have power and light and you put it into a bulb and it doesn't give that power and light out, what it does is it destroys the light. So this is what we this is what we find with Max Heindel. He gave everything that he had in life, so his inclination was always toward giving. Now, since we have 8 horoscopes in 1 hour, plus a little bit of introduction, we should spend no more than 4 minutes on a horoscope, and things move along really quickly. The second horoscope is the horoscope of Arlene Dahl, who probably nobody in the room knows. Does anybody in the room know Arlene Dahl? Okay. Arlene Dahl, there was just an unfortunate thing about our culture. Those that are born into male bodies have more opportunities to be out in the world, whereas those who are reborn into female bodies during the time that they're in female bodies are usually raising children and making the people who do things in the world. And for that reason, there's not always a lot of really good horoscopes for women that are known out in the world and that are famous. And the choices that you have are not always good choices. And so this is, so since the famous women we know are often movie stars, when you go through a database of hundreds and hundreds of horoscopes, you run into a lot of female movie stars, but only, you know, just a handful of Madame Curies. It's not a pleasant prospect. Now, this horoscope is another solar horoscope, you can see. It has the sun and 2 other planets and the ascendant in Leo. So this is, again, somebody that is perfectly solar or quite radiant. This is another person who shines out into the world. This is a sunny kind of person. Arlene Dahl is a famous movie star from, she's exceedingly beautiful. She had features that were, you know, like you're almost shocked at the beauty of her. She's of Norwegian descent. And of Norwegian descent, when you find someone that is very solar in the ascendant, they have all of the flaming golden yellow hair, and it was just, she's quite a person to behold. Now, so we can see that this is a solar type of individual. But the sun is conjoined to Neptune, which shows that there is a spiritual side to this person. And they are tending toward the second house as much as toward the first house, because the sun also rules the second house. This is a person that has spiritual interests, but the spiritual interests project into the second house. If you buy, for example, like I do, tabloids out of the supermarket just to find out what the other people are doing, you'll find in the back of the tabloids, call Arlene Dahl, famous professional astrologer. And so she has taken her spiritual interest, and she has taken that light, and she uses it in a material world, in a material way. Certainly, she doesn't know the difference between spiritual values and material values. You can't really take and put a price tag on something that is spiritual. It's something that only comes by living in the spirit. And by living in the spirit, one has to be somebody that sacrifices a bit. The personal self has to be set aside. But this is somebody who has used her light. She has used her fame in every which way to enrich herself. This is the Neptune, for example. On the material side of Neptune, it deals with fooling people. And one form of fooling people is cosmetics. And because she was naturally beauty, she was beautiful, she was a natural for having a cosmetic line. And so for many years, until she started becoming old, she's alive yet, I believe she's in her 80s. So for many years, while she was young and naturally very, very beautiful, you could buy Arlene Dahl cosmetics and hope that she would look as beautiful as she was. the quality that you look for with Neptune, especially in the first house, if a person is not deeply focused spiritually, is glamour. It puts a false sheen on things. Neptune, it's one of those peculiar things. The spiritual side of Neptune has the ability to see through things. You know, like those people who have eyes that you think can look right through you and know exactly what you're thinking. That's a Neptunian type of quality. But when it gets on the material side, it is more of a planet of reflection. And in that reflection, it puts a sheen of glamour, and that sheen of glamour is often very, very deceiving. All right. I guess that was more than 2 minutes. Oh, yeah. The thing to look at here is that the sun is exactly square to the moon. And that indicates that the moon is in Taurus, which is an exceedingly earthy sign. And that indicates that she has a lot of struggles between purely light and spiritual values and between them and the earthly values. This is somebody that is projected to fame. And when you are famous, you're almost automatically wealthy. Fortunately, Uranus, Moon makes good aspects with Uranus and with Jupiter, so there is some redeeming thing for that, and she can stay out of it. All right, let's look at the next horoscope. The next horoscope is somebody that probably everybody knows the next person. Garrison Keillor. The Bible tells us that the same sun shines on the just and on the unjust. And there is something that is implicit in that. We often have a feel of what it's like to be in sunlight. It's a wonderful feeling if it's too hot. If you look at a cat will always lay in a spot where the sunlight is on it because it feels good about it. What is not always obvious, what is implicit in the statement that the same sun shines on the just and on the unjust, is that we are all loved by the universal spirit. And the light that pours on all of us is a light that is filled with love. When it manifests others as something other than just a physical orb projecting light, when it manifests as spiritual characteristics, then another quality comes out. And that quality is wisdom, love wisdom. Now, I'm not going to say that Garrison Keillor is a perfect human being, but he's got his share of egoism and he does all sorts of things. You notice that anybody who ever teases him on that show never gets invited back again. They may be a regular for years and years, but they start teasing him, and he gets pricked, and that's it. But he does have wisdom. What he says about human beings and looking into their motivations, it is somebody who is can bring, because he loves people, he has that understanding. This person is solar, because the sun, Mercury, and Pluto are all in Leo. Unfortunately, the Virgo is rising, and the Virgo rising is sometimes a very thin-skinned person that doesn't like criticism and doesn't, you know, can be pretty petty. Like me, I don't have any pettiness in me. I'm an atypical Virgo rising, and you better not disagree with that. So this is somebody that has that leonine kind of wisdom. And he just doesn't, when he does his monologues and things like that, he just doesn't stand out there and give you, this is my wisdom for the day. He does something like the power of light always does. He plays with it. He plays with people's lives. And that quality of play is a leonine quality. people who are enlightened are happy people. They're cheery people. In fact, later in the week, we're going to look at some of it that I thought was very cheery and also quite enlightened. We're going to look at Rajneesh's chart. And Paul, he's a fun guy. Yes. Yeah. Well, there are long treatises about people that struggle with their association with him. All right, so what we're seeing here is a horoscope because the moon is in a positive sign, and it's not in an aspect to the sun, but through that rotating conjunction sextile with Saturn, moon, sun, and Mercury, we find somebody where the reflective light of the sun is harmonious with the projective light. Because otherwise, you're looking at the image of the light and the light. If there's, you know, like if we have like the Arlene Dahl chart, where there was a square between the sun and the moon, the image of light and the light itself are contrary to each other. And it's not a positive situation, and there's always diffidence and inability to act resolutely when you have the sun and moon not acting completely in harmony. His intelligence and wit is very clear because the sun and Mercury are together and they are sextile to the planets in Gemini. So you can see that there's a light of intelligence there. Sometimes when there's wisdom alone and without having all of the wit and the mental characteristics. So this is a pretty interesting horoscope and pretty positive at that, even though we're looking at only an extremely little bit of it. Let's look at one last solar chart. Unfortunately, we have to deal with another movie star, in this case a television star. This is somebody that has an extremely happy, sunny disposition. Everybody knew who Valerie Harper is? She played a character called Rhoda in a sitcom, and everybody would look at her. What? Yeah, Mary Tyler, but she had her own show afterwards. Yeah. And this is somebody, another one with the sun ruling the ascendant and in Leo, and in this case, four planets in the ascendant in Leo. So we again have somebody who's really solar. It means that to describe this person, you would say that this is someone who shines into the world, but who shines into the world in such a way that she looks to materialize things. It looks to objectify things. The sun is in the second house. This horoscope itself is like the light, because this is somebody who gives to a role everything that she has. This is an extremely leonine quality. There are other signs of the zodiac that are sincere and that are dedicated, but the sign Leo, like the sun in the heavens, is giving everything it has all the time. It does this, you know, even though we say that the sun is lazy and all of this and all of that, and it just likes to play. But the fact of the matter is that what makes for the sun is total giving. And this is a horoscope of somebody that you couldn't help but like, because everything that this person had, they gave. Now, this is a horoscope that has Mercury in the first house. And Mercury in the first house, we're going to see in quite a few horoscopes, is indication of childhood prodigy. When somebody learns very quickly and started, I believe she started as a childhood star and did things as a little girl. This is a planet, this is a horoscope that is active. There are 6 planets. Over half of the planets are in fire signs. And fire signs are the signs of light, spiritual light. And so this is someone who has an extremely strong sense of pride. Someone who respects herself, cares about herself. It sometimes gets it can get a little extreme, and there can be bursts of pride that are not pleasant to be around, but in general, this is somebody you like to be with. All right, I don't have too much more to say on that. I'm going to have to get... Yeah, even though they're incompatible signs, it's somebody that still had a hard time getting what she wanted in the world. You know, because not knowing what she, you know, the difference in values. All right. I'm probably the only person in the world who knows the next horoscope. only person in this room. Now, in the Rosicrucian philosophy, we're taught that the spiritual being associated with the visible sun is behind the visible sun, and that the visible sun is only an outward expression or manifestation. But for many people, the direct spiritual light, even though we symbolize it by sunlight, is too strong to take directly. So in many religions that were wisdom religions, such as the Greeks and now in Christianity, a lot of purely solar things are celebrated after a lunar condition. The best example is Easter, that when the Christ spirit is released from the earth at equinox, the full understanding and appreciation of that, humans have not been able to take that directly. And that for this reason, the celebration, the spiritual celebration of Easter, is after the first full moon, after the vernal equinox, which means that there's an element of reflected light. And that reflected light is something that we can take. That's something it's not too intense for us. Now, the moon represents the reflected light. And in the same way that we were protected by having that lunar reflective light, most of the animals that are prey, I'm talking the mammals, are night animals, and they're under the moon because there is protection for them under the moon. And so what we're talking about with the moon is not only a light that is a reflective light, but we're looking at a light that has the quality of care and protection and nurture and all of those kinds of things that go along with it. In the chart here, we have Elsbeth Eberton. We have Cancer rising, which is very lunar. And we have Moon and Mars in Cancer. So this is somebody who is a very defensive, protective person. And then there are those 5 planets in Taurus. And Taurus is where the Moon is exalted. Well, no, we haven't gotten to that. We should be looking at Elsbeth Eberton. Maybe flipped too many, huh? It should be right after the... So the moon is exalted in Taurus, so we have a horoscope here that has a lot of defensiveness and a lot of protectiveness. The sun is conjoined to Pluto, which indicates somebody who has a very strong character, And they sextile the moon and Mars, so this is a protective type of person. I'll tell you the story of her. This is a woman that is a matriarch. I think they're in their fourth generation of astrologers, except in the second, third, and fourth generation, they don't call it astrology, they call it cosmobiology, because they don't want to be associated with the name astrology. That's the kind of people that they are. The famous astrologer from England, Ronald Davidson, said he was asked to speak at a cosmobiology conference, and he said, what is this calling it cosmobiology? Let's call it astrology. He said, in where I live, he said, we had janitors that wanted to be called sanitary engineers. And he said, they were still sweeping the floor. and he says, we can call it cosmobiology, but what we're still doing is astrology. And so her son, Reinhold, was the big leader of cosmobiology in Germany and influenced most of European astrology for quite a long period of time. And Reinhold was a Nazi when it was fashionable to be a Nazi, and when it was not fashionable to be a Nazi, he wasn't any longer. Elsbeth was very different. She is a lunar protective type of person, and that's what the light of the moon does. She lived in Berlin during the Blitz, and she made horoscopes every day, and she could tell what neighborhoods were going to be struck by looking at, because she knew the chart of Berlin very well. And the neighbors relied on her, and she had privileges that other people did not have. And the neighbors always said, as long as Elsbeth is in the neighborhood, we're safe, because we know that she knows if this neighborhood would be hit with a bomb. And then she looked at the horoscope, and she knew the neighborhood was going to get it. And she knew the people weren't going to be able to get out. And so rather than panic the people, she took the bomb. And that's how she exited. And this is what a lunar protective type of person is. Interesting, I don't know if the Mars moon represents the taking a bomb or something like that, but that's the kind of person that she was. All right, let's look quickly at the next one. Yes. Yes, she went down with the ship. All right. This is the horoscope of Henri Cartier-Bresson. Does everybody know who this is? Yeah. Oh, it's too bad you don't know this. This is probably, some people rate this person as probably the greatest artistic photographer that has lived. This is somebody, it's illustrative of a lot of different things. First of all, there are three planets and the node in Cancer, and the moon is one of them. And three planets that are there, Moon, Venus, and Neptune, are the three most imaginative planets. And when you have all three imaginative planets packed together, this is someone who has a complete imaginative ability. I don't know that he was married, because he was a... Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a marriage. We'll talk about that, the seventh house part of it, in just a little bit. I'm going to take a little aside, because these three planets rule photographic process. Neptune is the ability to carry images through any medium, whether it is the physical world or any of the spiritual worlds. Venus adds the artistic touch of what makes a curve beautiful. And the moon is the condensing quality. In this case, in the photography, it's not so much true anymore, but the moon rules silver and has a lot to do with nitrogen. So the silver nitrate that is used in the photographic process is what is involved. So these three planets, this is a person you might say that is born to do photography. They have a sense or a touch for the medium. Now this is interesting because these three planets are, two of the three planets, the moon and Neptune, are planets that are inclined towards schizophrenia. And that is Neptune and the moon. And those two planets are also planets that are very strongly inclined toward being involved with cancerous growths and the entities that live inside of those cancerous growths. Now, there's a curiosity in that schizophrenics, as a population, are not very likely to cancer. So the question is, how can the same planets rule schizophrenia and cancer at the same time? And that would seem to disprove astrology. But what it does is shows you how you have to look at astrology in a deeper way. A photographer takes an image from his consciousness and finds it in the world, or takes an image from the world and takes it all the way back to the spirit. This is somebody who has the ability to use the imagination and to manifest it completely in the physical world on the film. The cancer person can't bring it all the way through. A cancer person is someone who takes the imagination and they're too inward with it, and they protect and they produce a cancerous tumor that they nurture. You can almost see the part of the body that a person is nurturing a tumor in, and so it's a misuse of the lunar Neptune thing. And there's also there's those negative images. You know, like the next time you're working with a really sharp knife, see if you don't often make those images of seeing you cut yourself. So they're there for protection, but there's a negative quality about them. But when they become cancerous, it means they aren't brought all the way out in the world to be completed and worked with and dealt with. But if you have somebody who's schizophrenic, you have somebody who is withdrawn even further. They don't even bring it as far as the physical body and not bringing it through, because the schizophrenic has a break in consciousness. Very often it's between the between the life ether and the reflecting ether, or between the mind and the desire body, so they are literally a vegetable. If you've ever seen a schizophrenic, they just sit there like a vegetable, even if they're not drugged very often. So this is somebody who cannot take the imaginative quality that makes for creation in the world. They don't bring it in at all. There is an escape or a retreat to the other side of the breach in consciousness from bringing the consciousness all the way through, whereas the cancer person is someone who takes the imagination and brings it partway through, but broods on it and it becomes a tumor, and somebody like this, as an artist, takes it and brings it all the way through. So when you look at a horoscope, you have to be able to see what level it is manifest on. And this gives us a perfectly good example. Now to get to the seventh house that Gary wanted to look at. The seventh house is something where you look at something from the other person's point of view. And so this is somebody that doesn't take a shot that is beautiful to him. When he's photographing, he's thinking of the way it's going to look for the person who's going to be looking at the photograph. And in that way, he has a sympathy, because the Neptune and the Moon give an empathetic quality when they're in Cancer, and he has a sympathy for where the viewer is going to be at. And once in a while, he does use sappy subjects. He has a very famous photo that is one of the most famous photos in the world, where there's like a tunnel of trees with light coming from the other end of the tunnel, and a little boy and a little girl walking through there. It's a very famous photo. Everybody's probably seen it one time or another, because it has a lot of circulation. What's interesting about this is that there is another revolving conjunction of planets, four planets, three of which are in Leo and one in the first degree of Virgo, and this shows a compensating type of quality. This shows that this is somebody that has a big, bright spirit and isn't only protective and isn't only reflective. Only that part is hidden. The image is what you see is from the lunar part, but the personality, the character, this is a very positive. He was a servant in the First World War as an ambulance driver or something like that. And this is somebody that traveled all over the world doing service work and getting photographs at the same time. Yes, and by the way, when the French had Vietnam as their territory or as their possession, he traveled a lot in Vietnam, and he has some spectacular photos of the countryside in Vietnam. So what we're talking about here is somebody that, because Mars, Jupiter, and the Sun, Mars is right in the center of that, this is somebody that has mechanical ability as well as artistic ability, and this is pretty much a total character. All right, let's look at the next one. My golly, we're going to get this in under an hour. Now, surely everybody knows who Renato Scotto is. You know, Renato Scotto, I think it's probably even 10 years by now, I guess, was a diva at the Metropolitan Opera Company. In the Rosicrucian philosophy, we are taught that the desire body was inaugurated in its evolution in the Moon period. And that for that reason, there is a very strong association between the desire body and the Moon. In fact, the desire world and body in general are lunar, irrespective of what was said in the morning talk. The lower desire world is Martial, and the higher desire world is Venus, but we'll go into a Max Seindel treatise on that tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon. So what we're talking about here, the central region, you might say the heart of the desire world and body, is called the region of feeling. And the Moon is a planet of feeling. So we have here the Moon conjoined the ascendant. We have somebody who is very sensitive with the feelings. And in this case, the Moon is in harmony with the Sun, because the Sun is in another sensitive sign, Pisces, in terms of emotional sensitivity. Those are the two most sensitive signs, are Pisces and Cancer. And so what we have is a very sensitive person. Does anybody know what a coloratura is? Yeah. A coloratura is a school of opera singing where you don't, the precision of hitting the notes isn't what counts. It is being able to give it emotional color. So the precise opera singers look down at coloraturas and say they don't know how to sing. They don't hit the notes right. But the coloraturas say, well, we have that lovely feeling that we carry on our singing, and it's not just like something generated from a computer.
This is the horoscope of our quadratura. I don't know how to pronounce the word correctly, so we're all in the dark to some extent. So this is somebody who does all of the feeling tones. And it's somebody who carries feeling protectively. The moon is not only reflective, it is receptive. And in its receptivity, sometimes it identifies with the process of receptivity. And this is why Cancer sometimes is subject to masochism. I identify myself as somebody who is receptive, and therefore it's all right to beat me. Now, this is not a masochistic person, but the audiences were sadistic to this person, thinking that this person, that, you know, with the ascendant and the moon in Cancer, there's a sensitive rapport with their audience. And in that sensitive rapport, the audience saw weakness in her. Or they, you know, they didn't need, they weren't consciously doing this. They weren't thinking, well, this is somebody who's obviously masochistic, somebody that needs to be put in line. They weren't thinking that consciously. But sometimes, well, I'll give you an example of what happens. Some people are tracked toward masochism. One time, I was young, I used to do a lot of crazy fasting. And I would fast for many, many days. And what is now the Menards in town here used to be an all-night cops store. This was in about 1970, maybe 71, but I think it was 1970. And I was on a grape juice fast, you know, Max Heindel grape juice fast. And I ran out of grape juice, and some of us were hanging around together. Remember Charlie Chesro? He was along that time, and Jeff Owen. And we didn't know where to find grape juice in the store. So we all spread out, went a different direction to look for grape juice in the store. And I came around the corner of an aisle, and, you know, into a new aisle, and here was this man like this toward me. He was cringing. And are we all right? All right? All right? Yeah. Yeah. And he was cringing like that. You know what my response was? Rah! Like an ogre. And that wasn't me. I got caught in one of those kinds of things. And, you know, because this is what he was putting out. And this is what happened with Renata Scotto. At one time, when she was first starting to play at the Metropolitan Opera, what happened was the people didn't like her, even though she was singing magnificently. And so what the people did, they're New Yorkers, and so what they did is they all started chanting, what was her name? The other opera singer, we're going to look at her, Callas, Maria Callas. And she's singing an aria, and the audience is chanting, Maria Callas, Maria Callas. And she just kept on singing. She was a professional. And eventually they died down. And when she finished her aria, one person clapped. You know who it was?
Maria Callas.
Maria Callas. But that goes to show you that when you're talking about the receptive light, Max Heindel says to be very careful about being too lunar, because you become too receptive and you become psychonegative. And that's, you know, you have to be receptive. Like, for example, the water signs are famous for healing. And Cancer is very often one of the best for healing because the Pisces quality has the sensitivity and the compassion for the suffering of someone, but they get too negative, psychonegative, too easy for that to happen. On the other hand, the Scorpio has the power of will. And Max Heindel says, you in healing, you lend your will to the patient, and then until the patient can stand on their own, and then they take it back. And Scorpio is strong in will, but it's not, compassion is not as strong suit. But Cancer being a cardinal sign, has the sensitivity and it has the gumption to go ahead and do something. Very often it's associated with that kind of healing work. Well, we're too long here. We got 3 minutes to finish this. The last horse. What? Yes, she eventually she won them over. She had a full career, I think 25 years at the Metropolitan Opera Company, and she's still alive, and she knew when to retire, because a lot of opera singers don't, and their voices start to crack, and they don't hit notes well, and she knew when to, and then she started a school, and I think to this day, even as an older woman, what is she here, what is her age? Yeah, 54, that means it's, yeah, well, that's 34, yeah. That would be 73 years old, yeah. Yeah, she still teaches. I think she even has her school in New York City. All right. This is a horoscope for taking in light. And when one takes in light and one has the Cancer nature, it's like looking at the moon. You can see the features on the moon. You can't look at the sun and see the features on the sun, but because the moon has that reflective light, all the shades between light and darkness, all of them can be seen. And an artist is someone who works with the shades of light and darkness. This is someone who is perspective, who has the sense of perspective, the depth of light. Now, this is an experiment that you can do. There have been books written about the hidden dimension. And there are a number of artists that are great because they understand the hidden dimension. And that is, they know how to make a painting that you get so close to it, and you, when you're in just the right spot, everything is... Have you ever seen one of those old stereopticon things where you look in and there are two pictures and you're looking through two glasses and then you see things in depth? This is someone who understood the hidden dimension so much that when you look at some of his paintings, they come alive. They have depth. I remember one time, and I think this is about 1968 or 69, at the Art Institute in Chicago, they had a Rembrandt show, and there were so many people that they did do it like they do it in Europe. They make you keep moving. They don't let you stop stop and look at a picture because there are so many people that want to get through. And so this was one of those cases, one of the few cases they did it in Chicago. And so you were in a line, and then you move from picture to picture and picture. And they have those, you know how art galleries are set up, they have those divider rooms, you know, you move from room to room, and you sometimes come around the corner. I came around the corner, and I got into the hidden dimension with a painting that was called The Rape of Lucretia. Which is a theme from early Roman history. In fact, it's even mythical Roman history. And here she was with clothes ripped and knife cuts and everything else, and the look on her face. And I came around the corner, and all of these people came around the corner and looked at it, took one look at it, and I burst into tears. I couldn't stop it because there was a quality of realism, a quality of being able to communicate that kind of feeling. That's what the receptive kind of consciousness, what the receptive light is like. Oh, I should have brought along. There's a, I think I got it in the printer. There's a famous painting of a knight in armor with a shield on, and it's a, you see only one side of the face, and that is Saint Germain. It is reputed that Saint Germain used to sit for Rembrandt. And he was the inspiration for his for a lot of his art. Now, let's see. I had probably a lot of other things I wanted to get into. Oh, yes. Mars is exactly conjoined the sun. And the moon is in its exaltation in Taurus. So we have another very lunar person. But this is somebody that communicates emotion. What he feels in a really vivid sense. And he, you know, he can project that kind of vivid energy because he's been able to take it in. It has stimulated him. What more to say?
The opposition of Neptune and Uranus.
Yeah.
And Henri also had that opposition of photographer. And I think there's a tie-in there, isn't there? I hadn't thought of that before.
Continue.
Well, no, that the two, I mean, they're your charts here.
I'm going to talk about something with Uranus and Neptune that I'm not going to talk about when I get to those two planets. The Uranus and Neptune could be called the line of invisibility. That is, Uranus rules the mystic side, Neptune rules the occult side. And when they are harmonious, they produce a kind of consciousness that there is no resistance to it. Those people born between 1939 and 1944 have a trine between Uranus and Neptune. And those are people who can see things and who can see things very clearly. It is like chamber music. It has been said, you know, like if you have a string quartet, it's like looking into another world through a window. But with Beethoven's string quartets, there's no glass in the window. There is an invisibility. There's a transparency so that the understanding and the feeling, the mystical feeling, the love wisdom that Uranus in this sense representing life spirit and not necessarily in the etheric body and Neptune ruling human spirit, when they're in complete harmony with each other, you can see through things and you can see through them very clearly. This is, this has to do with the a turnover. At the time of around the First World War, you know, like it reflects on what we're doing now. There are not a lot of initiates being made right now. And there haven't been many since the time of Max Heindel. And this inaugurated a whole thing because, in the first place, it is right after the opposition of Uranus to Pluto. And Uranus rules the extreme left, and Pluto rules the extreme right. And this means that after the opposition, the faster planet then takes over and dominates its half of the cycle. And what happened under that opposition was the Russian Revolution. And all of the revolutions that swung things to the left were in the Uranus half of the cycle. And then when they conjoined again, everything was civil rights right up until the Detroit and the Watts riots in Los Angeles, and then there was the new cycle and Pluto took over. And when Pluto took over, we had, again, just like we have now, big corporations gobbling up big but in the cycle before, they were called trusts. And now they are multiple corporations taking one, eating up another like a bigger big fish. And everything is extremely to the right. And we haven't hit the height of that yet because Uranus hasn't squared Pluto. And when that happens, then things will gradually taper off and the right will diminish until the opposition, and then the left will take over again and it'll go in an extreme the other direction. You're not going to be here for Friday night, because Friday night we're talking about a statement from Max Heindel that all consciousness is a result of the struggle between the vital body and the desire body. Extremely important statement. And the vital body reflects into, I'll give you a preview since you, the vital body reflects into the life spirit, and the desire body reflects into the human spirit. The consciousness is in the spirit, but the experience is in the bodies. So when things go to the right, things go toward the human spirit, because it's all individual rights. The human spirit is what the Jehovistic religions are about. They're breaking all the clans and all the races and all the cultural things into individuals. The life spirit is the collective. It's the, what we see as collectives now are poor images. We see communism and labor unions and things like that. They do something for the collective, but they're not really an altruistic thing yet. The hope was always there, but, our material. And so that when things swing back and forth between the left and the right, on a political conscious level, the same thing happens as what's happening between the desire body and the vital body. When things go too far to the right, the human spirit reflects into the desire body. And the weakness of the desire body in our materialistic time is greed. And what happens is this, we have all those depressions and things like that that are a result of greed. And when things, as Pluto pulled away after the Watts riot and it got sextile, that was downfall of the Soviet Union. On the day that Mars passed over, I believe it was Uranus, is the day that in Gorbachev times, they stated, well, a little capitalism isn't so bad. They literally said that to the world. And that was quite a change. And in that, what was the downfall of when things swing to the left? It's the weak side, the vital body. The vital body becomes complacent. There is, it just wants to vegetate, and it's all it wants to do. And so there was no incentive in the Soviet Union. If the government was going to take care of you, there was no incentive to do anything. Even so, when you go to the right, you have incentive, but it's somewhat selfish incentive, but it's selfish vegetativeness on the left. Yes?
Do you think that what we call the generation called the baby boomers?
Yes.
Are we going to end up being tools of that, in spite of ourselves?
It all depends.
And desperate to hang on to the good old days and all that stuff.
The baby boomers is hard to take in terms of the Uranus-Neptune cycle, because the early ones have the trine, the later ones have the square. The early ones produced like John Lennon and Bob Dylan and all kinds of very brilliant people that were creative. The later ones have the square. And all of my life, since I'm just a little bit older than the baby boomers, all of my life I have been having to counsel people of that group, the second part. What happens is that during the Neptune trine Uranus, people experimented with drugs, and they saw the light, and they quit. They had enough sense not to. But their little brothers and sisters were watching, and they didn't have the control. Yes, they didn't have the control. And so they experimented with drugs, and they just burned themselves up. And now a lot of them are coming toward retirement, and they want to be spiritual, and they can't get free of their cross purposes in spirituality. They don't necessarily want to be mystics, and they don't necessarily want to be a cult. And I'm doing the counseling that I've been doing recently has been almost all with people that are in their 50s and fighting with that very issue. What do I want to do with my spirituality? Yes.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to be here tomorrow, huh?
No.
The Mars Venus is taken directly from Max Heindel. The
Richard Touch.
No. All keywords. I'll be real quick. I'll go over this a little slower tomorrow.
What do you call the line then?
The line of emotion or the line of desire. The key word from Max Heindel for Aries is self-assertion. It isn't stated as a key word by Max Heindel, but the key for Libra is loving self-sacrifice. The key word for Scorpio, which is the other Mars side, is repulsion. So if you take the words out of the cosmic conception and out of the astrology books, you find that for Mars, it is self-assertion, this is mine, and repulsion that drives other people off, and so that the lower desire world is ruled by Mars. It's the realm of self-assertive desire and repulsive emotions that come out of it. The higher desire world is ruled by Venus. It's self-sacrificing, and as a result of that self-sacrifice, there is attraction.
What about the Taurus?
Taurus, Max Heindel's keyword for Taurus is attraction.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You can take verbatim the simplest, the most concrete things out of Max Heindel. You get a really good understanding. That's a thumbnail preview, but there's much, much more to it. In fact, we're not even going to do a whole lot tomorrow.
Oh,
we got all week here. Let's close with the Rosicrucian students' prayer. Oh God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be accepted.